dashed out into the corridor. "Now we find out how much security they got here," Pancho said to herself, actually grinning as she raced on her long legs up the carpeted corridor.
Fuchs had thought about calling Astro Corporate Headquarters to try to speak with one of Pancho's aides, but decided against it. None of them would have the authority to give him the help he needed, nor the wit to see the necessity of it. With Pancho out of the picture, Fuchs realized he was on his own. Just as well, he told himself as he rode the powered stairs down to Selene's bottommost level. It's better not to involve Pancho or anyone else. What I have to do, I'll do for myself. Nodon, Sanjay, and Amajagal were waiting for him at the bottom of the last flight of stairs. The corridor down at this level was empty, as Fuchs had expected it to be. Only the very wealthiest lived down here, in the converse of penthouses on Earth. No crowds here, he said to himself, as the four of them strode down the broad, empty, quiet corridor. Fuchs saw that the walls here were decorated with bas-reliefs, the floor softly carpeted. Security cameras watched them, he knew, but they looked like a quartet of maintenance workers. Nothing to set off an alarm. So far. Have you set the maintenance computer? Fuchs asked Nodon. The younger man nodded, his big liquid eyes looking slightly frightened. Yes, sir, the water will be shut off to this level in... He glanced at his wristwatch. 3 minutes. Good, said Fuchs. He had no idea how long it would take the maintenance people to discover that the water to level 7 had been shut off. Long enough to get the four of us inside Humphrey's Grotto, he hoped. The corridor ended in a blank stone wall with a heavy metal hatch set in it. Beside the hatch was a keypad. Do you have the access number? Fuchs asked Nodon. I haven't had enough time on my job with the maintenance department to be assigned down here, Nodon said, his voice little more than an apologetic whisper. But I know the emergency numbers that work on the upper levels. Try them. Nodon hunched slightly before the keypad and began tapping numbers. Fuchs watched with gathering impatience. One of those numbers should override the security code, he told himself. Humphreys has to allow Selene emergency crews inside his private preserve. He's got to. Not even he can refuse to allow emergency workers to enter his area. That's written into Selene's basic safety regulations. The hatch suddenly gave off a metallic click. In the stillness of the empty corridor, it sounded like a gunshot. That's it! Fuchs hissed. He set a meaty hand against the cold steel of the hatch and pushed. It opened, slowly, silently. A gust of soft, warm air brushed past him as the hatch swung all the way open. Fuchs gaped at what he saw. A huge expanse filled with brilliant flowers, warm artificial sunlight glowing from the lamps high overhead. The very air heavy with scents he hadn't smelled since he'd left Earth. And trees. Tall, stately, spreading their leafy branches like arms open to embrace him. It's a paradise, Amarjagal whispered, her eyes wide with awe. Nodon and Sanja stood beside her, mounts agape. Fuchs felt tears welling up. With an angry shake of his head, he growled, Come on. The security alarms must be going off. Their cameras are watching us. He started up the brick path that wound through the beds of bright, colorful flowers, heading for the mansion they could see through the trees. Paradise, Fuchs thought. But this paradise has armed men guarding it, and they'll be coming out to stop us in a few minutes.
Nobuhiko pushed up the sleeve of his green surgical gown and looked at his watch. Turning to the chief of the interrogation team, he demanded, Well, where is she? I've been waiting for more than half an hour. The man's mask was slightly askew. He pushed back his shower cap hat, revealing a line pressed into his high forehead by the cap's elastic band. Tsavo was to bring her here, he said. They should be here by now, said Nobuhiko. The man hesitated. Perhaps they are... They are what? With a shrug, the man said, They spent a night together back at Cellini when they first met. Perhaps they are in bed together now. One of the gowned and masked women tittered softly. Nobuhiko was not amused. Send someone to find them at once.
Her travel bag clutched under one arm, Pancho walked briskly along the corridor, trying to remember the route she had followed when Savo brought her down to this level. Crap, she thought. It was only an hour or two ago, but I'm not sure of which way we came. My memory shot to hell. She thought about the stealth suit she had used so many years ago to sneak into Humphrey's mansion unseen. I could use a cloak of invisibility right about now, she told herself as she glanced up at the corridor ceiling, searching for surveillance cameras. She couldn't see any, but she knew that didn't mean there weren't any watching. She spotted a pair of metal doors at the end of the corridor. The elevator. Pancho sprinted to it, leaned on the button set into the wall. Now we'll find out if they're watching me. The elevator's working, means they don't know I'm on the loose. The elevator doors slid smoothly open, and Pancho stepped into the cab. It wasn't until the doors shut again and the elevator started accelerating upwards that she thought it might be a trap. Jeeps! They could have an army of guards waiting for me at the top level.
Torch Ship Elsinore. An ordinary passenger riding out to the Rockrat's habitat at Ceres would have been quickly bored in the cramped confines of the torch ship. Elsinore was accelerating at 1/6 G so that its sole passenger would feel comfortable at the familiar lunar level of gravity. But like all the ships that plied between the moon and the belt, Elsinore was built for fast, efficient travel, not for tourist luxuries. There was no entertainment aboard except the videos broadcast from Cellini or Earth. Meals were served in the neatly appointed but decidedly small galley. Edith had dinner with the ship's captain and one of his officers, a young Asian woman who said little but listened attentively to the ship's passenger and her skipper. "We'll be vectoring out of the radiation cloud tomorrow," the captain announced cheerfully over his plate of soy meat and mushrooms. "Ceres is well clear of the cloud's predicted path." "You don't seem worried about it," Edith said. He made a small shrug. "Not worried, no. Respectful, though. Our radiation shielding is working, so we're in no danger, and by this time tomorrow we should be out of it altogether." "Will the cloud reach the belt at all?" she asked. "Oh, yes. It's too big and intense to dissipate until it's well past the orbit of Jupiter. Ceres is well clear of it, but a good half of the belt is going to be bathed in lethal radiation." Edith smiled for him and turned her attention to her own dinner of bioengineered carp fillet. After dinner, Edith went to her cabin, sent a laser-beamed message to her husband back at Cellini, then started working on the first segment of the documentary she had planned. Sitting on the tiny couch of her cabin with the video camera perched on its mobile tripod by the bed, she decided to forego the usual Edie Elgin cheerleader smile. Covering a war was a serious matter. "This is Edie Elgin, aboard the torch ship Elsinore," she began, "riding out to the asteroid belt where a deadly, vicious war is taking place between mercenary armies of giant corporations. A war that could determine how much you pay for electrical energy and all the natural resources that are mined in the belt." She got to her feet and walked slowly around the little cabin, the camera automatically pivoting to keep her in focus. "I'll be living in this cabin for the next 6 days until we arrive at Ceres. Most of the men and women who go out to the belt to work as miners or prospectors or whatever travel in much less comfortable quarters." Edith went to the door and out into the passageway. The camera trundled after her automatically on its tripod as she began to show her viewers the interior of the torch ship. As she spoke, she hoped that this segment wouldn't be too boring. "If it is, I can cut it down or eliminate it altogether," she thought. "I don't want to bore the viewers. That is